What's going on, my people? You're listening to The Score, an urban music education podcast hosted by Eric and Justin, where we discuss tips and strategies on how to become a more effective, compassionate, and culturally responsive music educator. What's going on, my people? This is Eric.
And this is Justin.
And we're your hosts for
The Score.
Welcome to episode 33, What If?
Yeah, man. So as we get into this episode, man, I think this is going to be a very refreshing and hopefully calming for a lot of our listeners out there, colleagues, people that's getting ready to, you know, figure out what we're going to do. Over this week, I was kind of reading some different stories about different districts around Texas that were having serious conversations about band directors, fine art teachers, choir teachers, all of those things, because the norm of education is going to change, possibly because of COVID-19 and not knowing how this disease is going to flesh itself out over the next 2 months. So I started talking with my staff and other friends and even Eric about what does it really look like if we don't have jobs, or what does it look like if we can't have face-to-face community with our students? What does it look like if there is no football season? What does it look like if there's no marching competitions and we can't have summer band? And I think it's a real conversation to have, not only because it could happen, but I think right now as band directors, we can all attest, and people that are in the field, we feel very lonely right now, right? We feel very lonely because we're not able to walk in each other's office and just kind of talk. We're not able to see our kids. And so I think it helps for us to kind of acknowledge the elephant in the room, to give us a sense of peace and contentment, but also for us to really have some real conversation. So I want to talk to you, Eric, as a college professor. Your situation is starkly different from us as the high school, middle school, but it's very similar in that you have a body of students that are chomping at the bit to figure out what we're going to do. So I would like to know, like, with these what ifs, where has your mind gone, and what have you thought about in the new place of what your job will be?
So I'm not going to lie, in the fact that solitude brings in at times pessimism. And we can start going off the deep end. And what if I don't have a job? You know, what if my responsibilities change? What if I'm no longer a large ensemble director?
Right.
You know, all these things. And so luckily, I work with the staff and colleagues that are very, very optimistic. And we're kind of, I feel, are being very proactive at meeting consistently. We actually meet, if not once, if not twice a week, to bounce ideas off of each other, to bring up solutions. Actually, next week, we're having a meeting to discuss some potential solutions to what it would look like for various, starting dates, whether it be, are we having face-to-face? Are we delaying start? Are we doing hybrid? Are we all online? And with all those components, we're kind of being ahead. And so the one thing that I do love about our industry is the fact that, you know, I started thinking about it the other day, like, who are engineers meeting on Zoom and collaborating with other engineers across the country to better their craft the way that educators are right now, and specifically our network of music educators, where you're seeing Zoom meetings pop up every day and virtual conferences popping up. And it started making me think, like, if we are those type of people that are going to go and try to collaborate with others, then we can do the same by providing solutions to what might be different in the fall.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that we need to prepare ourselves for. And hopefully with the conversation that you and I are going to have is at least going to give some people like, you know what, I might try that, or I haven't considered that, or, just different things, because I know right now it's such an insecure time. And then if you are in those Facebook groups, you are seeing the PDFs and the screenshots of pink, pink slips being given out to our colleagues. And so now you're thinking, am I next? You know,
is
my job safe? Should I go consider a different industry? So for us, we are preparing a platform to go all online. Additionally, some of our courses that have been face to face are now going to be offered at the undergraduate level into a more of an online component from this day forth, which would make our classes more accessible and even potentially, you know, be able to teach more students. So all that to say, we're in the beginning stages, but we are going forward with at least, you know what, we're going to be ready and we're going to get, we're not going to get caught off guard the way we did coming out of spring break. That was like, oh yeah, by the way, y'all are teaching online from this point on. And you're like, huh, what's the first thing I do? So we're at least, you know, being proactive as a community of educators to try to, you know, provide solutions that are going to be feasible for all involved.
I think I'm taking the same page. I mean, obviously on a lower level in regards of teaching, you know, the 6th through 12th grade. Right now, I am planning and working as though there will be a band camp at the end of July. But on the backside of that, I'm also preparing myself to do further online teaching. What does it look like for me to create more teaching videos? What does it look like for us? Because in our district, there's three different ideals going around. Either we're going to go back to school as normal, we're either going to commit to a full year of online learning, or we're going to do some hybrid of sort where kids are on for 2 days and then they stay at home for online learning. So I'm just thinking of ways that if we are no longer able to meet for our normal sectionals, band rehearsals, you know, to get prepared for a Friday night game because they may be canceling football season, then what does my online platform look like? And this is the real thing. What does it look like to go against what normal music education has looked like for the last, you know, some odd years? And I think that's the hard question. It's not as though will we have jobs. I think that's a relevant question, but it really means is how do we recreate ourselves, right? We're constantly teaching kids how to create music and moments, but here's an opportunity for a person who's been teaching for 10 years, 12 years, or maybe it's going to be year two for you and you just got comfortable in what you just did and now there is a paradigm shift. I think you have to be thinking about what we do, and I think for us, you, myself, we have these other aspects to our musicianship. You being a DJ, you being, you know, heavily into jazz, me being a church musician and a producer and working through, you know, music technology with production value. Like, that can become a real thing in the classroom because it has the most ability. It has the biggest ability to make sense in the paradigm that we would be entering into.
Exactly. It makes all the sense, man, because one of the things that I wanted to provide, you said paradigm shift, and I'm gonna use another word, and pedagogical shift.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Because I want first educators to ask themselves this question: what's the one thing or list of things you've always said I don't have time to do that? And make a list of those, and then could those work now?
Right.
The other thing is for us as ensemble directors to come to the realization, especially in the state of Texas, that our curriculum is at times, if not always, performance-based.
Yeah.
We're working towards the next concert. We're working towards the next contest. We're working towards the next evaluation.
Yep.
And if we don't have those things anymore, you know, I heard through the grapevine in one district that somebody said, what do we do if we don't have UIL marching? You know, and for that limit that you have put on yourself as an educator to assume that's the only way of
that's
doing
it. That's all we got. Yeah.
We have to really, really think outside the box. And yes, you are right. We at least come with, you know what? I have done music in other aspects. I've done music in other in other modes and methods that is still music and is still creating music. And I think that's the thing that we as educators have to be vulnerable in saying, you know what? I really don't understand that. I want to understand that. And the other question to ask ourselves is, what are things that we wish that our students, especially instrumentalists, should leave once they leave our, you know, our communities, our campuses, our schools into, let's say they do become music majors, where it has been proven that instrumentalists have such a hard time with oral skills and ear training. So if we are aware of that and we know that we had issues with that, you know,
right.
And so those kind of, when we are prevalent to those experiences and those lived experiences in college, why would we still be, you know, not allowing our students to benefit from learning those aspects and being more prepared as musicians, whether it be still ensemble or individual? And so, you know, I wanted to throw out some of those things out because I want people thinking outside the box, if you will, to understand that we are going to have to, you know, be advocates for ourselves. And if not, somebody else is going to make the decision for us.
And then we'll be out of a position.
Exactly.
Because we were unwilling to step outside of our comfort zone. And I think, and here we are, we in the same part of the conversation for you and me, right? Directors that we're just directors of color. You are who you are. I am who I am. And so for us, it's not hard for us to think outside the box. I said this jokingly in our staff meeting. We were going through our leadership auditions and getting kids prepared for the interview. And we were just, you know, meeting up and stuff. And I said, hey man, if push comes to shove, man, my percussion class will literally become music production and dealing with how to build songs, how to build beats. What is a beat? What's a melody? How does melody fit into a verse? What's a vamp? What's a bridge? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And how do we change? How does tempo affect a song topic or whatever the case may be? And I think that, and we laughed and things like that, but as a staff, we just really started to pick our brains and say, well, this turns into something else. It turns into a small chamber type of environment, much very similar to smaller colleges that don't have marching bands or right. don't have the huge intel or resource to have this, that, and the third. They have chamber groups and they have small ensembles where kids are still learning how to be educators, still learning how to be musicians. Because I think we have to get out of this mindset that says if it's not 8 to 5, if it's not hit the Met, if it's not, you know, all of these things, then kids cannot learn music. No, they can still learn it. It's just another avenue. And I think we have to be willing to. That's why I think this episode is important, because the what if helps you help your students better.
Mm. And I think that's going to be hard for some people.
Yeah.
Where just the other day we met to consider restructuring the curriculum of a class that's been offered at the university for, you know, prior to my time even being there as an undergrad.
Right.
And it was awesome to kind of hear what's being brought to the table. But the end product, what we kind of came up with, was a representation of the collective. And yeah. I think if we involve colleagues and sometimes in this decision making and the willingness to tap into people that know how to do this. So like, you know, what would it look like to outfit your students with a MIDI keyboard and a laptop, you know, or a microphone? Or if they are instrumentalists, what would it look like for them to record themselves playing their instrument and write a song, or the structures of songwriting?
Right.
You know, because we all know that if you don't do band the way we've been doing band in the state of Texas, once you graduate and you don't have an ensemble to be a part of,
you don't play that instrument.
Exactly.
Anymore.
More than not, people are not playing their instrument anymore.
Right.
And because they don't have the conductor in front of them. They don't have the Met behind them. They're, you know, that's what they were used to when they put the instrument up to their face or they strapped up. And we have to be willing to look outside of that. And I think that's the biggest point, is that we're not trying to discredit, because by all means, I still want to be
I want to be on the field.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I don't want people to take this away and they're like, well, they don't want to be band directors anymore. No.
No, I'm
by
not
all
that
means,
at all.
We still want to be the traditional aspect of what it looks like to be a band director. But if we can't in the fall, what would it look like to still teach our students effectively for them to not lose too much ground if and when we get a vaccine and we are able to get back together into our band halls, into our music rooms, and then we're not having to reteach or teach completely from the get-go. Now we have concepts and skills to build off of and saying, hey, you guys, remember that assignment I gave you to create X, Y, and Z on MuseScore from your own composition? Remember that form that I told you guys about? Well, this piece now entails that, you know, and relating to what we do. I think that's going to be, it's going to be hard for some people, but if you're willing, you know, there's enough collaboration going on.
Oh man,
right now
so much
that we can say, you know what? Hey, I hear that you've given a class on songwriting, and what would that look like for my music appreciation course that at times could be a dumping ground in our urban settings?
Right.
You know, that we have to be proactive, and I hope and I hope people are, because, you know, I obviously I'm a little bit better with time and space right now and even mental headspace, because the semester is over. So I'm able to work on research and even consider different options that would look best for my students.
Yeah.
But if you're still in the work and teaching students right now, and just kind of, you're going kind of like trial by error. and you're mm-hmm. trying something out, like, okay, that didn't work out.
Yeah.
But this could work out. Let's keep that. What worked for you? What didn't work for you? The same way we've done for instrumental techniques and on ensemble rehearsal techniques, the way we know we've tried it on a practitioner level, it's on us to say, hey, what have you guys tried? And I would even make it more personable to reach out to colleagues within your own district or neighboring district or within your own state or us. You know, we don't have all the answers, but these are things that I would love for more of a personal interaction between colleagues. You know, like, hey, let me bounce some ideas off of you. What do you think? And I think this is a really, really great opportunity for us to do some more individual development as opposed to ensemble development that we've been kind of trained almost to do.
Yeah, I agree. I think Yellow Board right now, we are so familiar with that place to go in there to figure out, you know, the different tools to help our band. What if we as directors right now just banded together for all the directors out there, educators that have another life to their musicianship, whether you are a church musician, whether you are a DJ, whether you play in cover bands, whether you write song, whatever it is, if we can start putting those things into the internet, into the atmosphere, so it can start to help some of our directors who this is what they've done for 25 years. Mm. So this is unprecedented for them. For me, for Eric, for others of us that are 8 years in, 9, 10 years in, you know, we've been doing it long, but we haven't been doing it long where this is all we know, right?
Yeah, yep.
And so we have to be able to commit. I know there are going to be some directors that if they say, hey, we're going to make an online learning hybrid of sorts where kids still come to school, but their days off, you're going to revert back to play these scales, do this university, you know, scale warm up, whatever, whatever. What is that helping though? It's busy work. The same work we complain to our teachers of our students when they have issues in the classroom. We've submitted ourselves to that rather than saying, what does it look like for you to get a score and we erase the alto part? You listen to the score and you come up with your own alto sax part. You know what I'm saying? It may not be the conventional learn this, you know, this etude, but it gives a child an opportunity. They could be a sophomore in your band program, and that's the instance that they learn how to make music and create it and be sensitive to listening and hearing. So then if they say January band is back on, this student has been writing music, so now we're learning UIL center pieces, but they now have an understanding, oh, this is how my part fits in.
Mm.
Let me listen to this. This is my voice. This is the voice in this, you know, this SATB, you know, chord voicing or whatever the case may be. So, you know, let's not get stuck in conventionality.
That you just said, let's not get stuck, because I think some people are, you know.
Yeah.
And it might be even for the lack of response they're getting from students right now.
Right.
You know, and it's
right.
kind of like
it's frustrating.
It, you know, almost they ask themselves, what's the point?
Yeah.
You know, let's say you have a class of 30 and two are signing in to your stuff. You know, how would you feel as an educator knowing right. that you put up time and effort to prepare and that yeah. you're getting hit back with, you know, lack and lack of response? And so hopefully we start gathering some solutions, because I've heard of districts throughout the country saying, you don't have access to Wi-Fi, get in the car, or parents get in the car, or sit outside the library where you can pick it
Come
up.
Come on, man.
You know what
Come
I mean?
Come on, bro.
And that's unrealistic. That's
it's rude.
That's rude. You know what I'm saying? Like all these things to say where we have to work around some of these issues that exist within
yeah.
poverty or yeah. or lack of access.
Yeah.
And we're not making, you know, them wrong for that, you know,
Mm-mm.
because students at right now, if they don't have the ability to work and if their parents are out of a job, how are we going to fault them for lack of broadband?
Checking in.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
you know, we're educated, salaried individuals. And even some of us, our colleagues don't have the bandwidth with their mm-hmm. Wi-Fi to maintain what we're doing. So
right.
all this to say, we have to. And I'm really glad that you and I are walking in with a very half glass full optimist approach, because it requires us to do that. Because if we're going to be the facilitators of our students' learning, we have to be the ones willing.
Yes.
We have to. Key
word, bro. Willing. I like that.
We have to be. And there's no ifs, ands, or buts. Because if your students are going to walk up and their first question is going to be, okay, we don't have band, then what do we do? You know,
right.
should I go join something else? Should I quit?
Mm-hmm.
Should I do all these questions that I know are crossing their mind? It's like, no. You're still going to be a musician. We're still going to work together. You know,
yeah.
even better, I'm going to be able to have more individual interaction with you guys. You know, all these things that we can use to our benefit is going to And I will say this. Let's say you are preparing for an online component. Once we do go back face-to-face, you are going to have an assortment and not a, you know, a whole folder of resources to be able to tap into that can maximize your face-to-face instruction. So, like, let's be open to this. Like, if we got the time, let's go ahead and front load. Let's upload the videos. Let's get people to work with us. And then we can use those later on.
As we take a break from our discussion, we're jumping into the segment called In Rotation. During this time, each of us will get an opportunity to share what we're currently listening to. Favorite artists, genre, album, playlist. If you have any recommendations, drop us a line on our social media platforms at PodTheScore. Or send us an email, podthescore@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you.
In rotation, ladies and gentlemen. All right, so I got Jacob Collier's new song featuring Mahalia and Ty Dolla $ign, All I Need. So from my understanding, he actually kind of did this Instagram live, and he did a poll or some sorts of, like, if I get X amount of likes or retweets or something of that sort, I'll release one of my new tracks off the album. This one dropped. There's just something about Jacob Collier as a
beast.
Fan that's, you know, respects people that do reharmonizations to groove to. I mean, this guy from, and it doesn't stay the same within the first four measures. Like, he takes it somewhere else. You expect some repetition, and there will be some with some, you know, he just check it out. If you've never heard of Jacob Collier, first check him out. But if not, check out his new track called All I Need. Justin, what you got?
So I really don't have any new artists. So on Instagram, they've been doing this thing. Timbaland and Swiss Beats have been doing this thing called Versus. So what they do is they get two artists that have had some level of fame and popularity with their music, and they basically just do a round robin of records back and forth, and this artist plays a certain record, and you get to hear the influence of the record. You get to hear all the behind the scenes of how the song came to be, who produced it, who was on background vocals and stuff that you just never knew, and it's super nostalgic. So I just really been listening to all the playlists. Like, this past week was Nelly and Ludacris, the week before was Jill Scott and Eric Badu, who are like, would be the matriarchs of the neo soul and jazz soul era that was really big in the early 2000s. So it's just really been dope to just go back through their catalogs and just realize, like, they were really ahead of their times, because a lot of those records sound like they could be played today in current radio streams. So that's all I've been on, man, just digging in the crates.
All right, we're back. So Justin, obviously people are listening, and as you and I do for different podcasts, we try to hear a conversation, and if not specifically, some solutions that could work for us. And so what have you either thought about with yourself or with your staff that have been some potential solutions for the what if?
So for me, it's just one of the biggest things is communication. We're in the midst of picking our leaders and getting drum majors and all that kind of stuff. So we have just been very amped about making sure we are talking with people, and not just via email, like literally setting up the Zoom meeting. So I just had a meeting this week with the kids that auditioned for the front ensemble and the drum line. And we talked about, what is our goal? What are we trying to do amidst this COVID-19 when the season starts, whenever that starts? And so I said, we still want to be committed to everything that I've been teaching and talking about. So I've shown them videos of myself in college and in band, and we've talked about watching some DCI, WGI videos, some other show style, you know, drumline videos like Norfolk and, you know, NCA&T, just to give a sense of normalcy and make them still believe and understand and trust that we're still pushing forward and coming up with systems that they don't feel like, well, summer's coming and we're not supposed to have any band. We can't go anywhere. No, summer may be coming. Once school is out, we'll take that week. But in June, Monday, all snare players, snare line, you and me on Zoom. Tuesday, Quince. Wednesday, bass line. And then Thursday, front ensemble. I know you may not have the full marimba, but what does it look like for us to talk through some of the things we want to do, watch more videos, just so you can be more engaged? I think a lot of times we miss the fact that a lot is caught more than taught in music education, right? We do a lot of academia and pedagogy, But sometimes it's just from kids seeing and watching and looking and emulating. So I think you have to communicate and have a schedule where your kids can still be, for my high school guys, have a schedule where your kids can still be connected. Even for you middle school guys, if you want to do a summer music, you know, camp, what does it look like to have something engaging 2 days out of the week that kids can log in on? We can watch videos. We can see different things that would still push the momentum and keep the excitement. So communication and coming up with an alternate system that still engages your kids that doesn't have to be graded. There are no grades. There is no turn this in, turn this plan assignment in. You need to meet standard. No. If you can get on Zoom, let's get on Zoom and let's work through some stuff that I think will be beneficial for you in that mental health mindset and just in the normalcy of summer won't even be summer. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because like you saying that, summer's not going to be summer. You're right. Like most people didn't realize that, you know, your house is your summer staycation. You know, your backyard's going to be where you're going to hang out. And, you know, the family and I had plans to go down to Mexico. Obviously, that's not going to happen. So if we are being proactive by, you know, providing these solutions, one of the things that I offered in the first half was how us at Prairie View have taken the opportunity to take one of the general education courses and kind of restructure the curriculum. And yeah. So what would that look like, especially for my colleagues that I know get dumping grounds? And the dumping grounds are sections of students that need a fine arts credit to graduate. And so because we don't have a cap to our classes in the state of Texas and for music courses, that we pretty much can fit in what's at the capacity of that room. And usually we either teach one of two things, whether it be three things. It could be music appreciation, it could be music history, or music theory. Now, if we're teaching these subjects, I would openly ask my colleagues, how many of y'all thoroughly enjoyed your undergraduate music history course? You know, so if you didn't, why would you be doing the same thing to
that
your
you
students?
Didn't like.
Exactly. Yeah. But unfortunately, at times, that's all they know.
Yeah.
And so if you were given this an abundance of information, which there is in music history and the way we teach it in Western European music, then you think, well, I got a book here. Let me pass it out. Sit, fill out the worksheet. Don't waste my time. Let's keep moving. What would it look like to restructure those classes to teach hip hop, to teach popular music, to teach chord progressions that will align to songs that they're familiar with and saying, you know what? Hey, here's a chord progression. And by the way, all these tunes play within these chord progressions. Mm-hmm. What would it look like, specifically speaking, to a large Latino community? What would it be to teach a student to play Las Mañanitas on a guitar or a vihuela?
Wow.
Something that I know I would have loved to have learned even now. You know, like recently when I picked up the vihuela in the last 2 years, I've been able to take the instrument and go and sing now because it's a cultural tradition within our family. Mm-hmm. So it's an opportunity for us to restructure classes that we already have instead of having to go pick a new course code or different things. So this is just a plea to some of y'all that I know deal with dumping grounds, because I dealt with that in my career as well, to fill up my schedule and to validate me being a full-time teacher in an under-resourced school. Then it, you know, hey, you need to have three sections of this. I don't know about y'all, but I like to enjoy the things that I teach as well. I have to have joy in it. And that goes into my programming. That goes into, you know, it's like, am I going to spend months and weeks on this piece and I don't even enjoy it? Exactly.
Right. Right.
So that's the first one that comes to mind. Restructuring some classes that we're already not too fond of and make it more appealing for ourselves and our students. And then the next would be, this is time right now that we have to reflect.
Yeah.
And you know, we're ending this, you know, for my K-12 colleagues, most of them have a couple more weeks left. And so they're coming up to the end. When we get to the summer, use some of that time to reflect. Stop.
Yes.
You know, go ahead and jot some things down, you know, decompress. Don't go so hard, because I was a big advocate of that as a high school marching band director, that you need time to recharge.
Mm-hmm.
You need that. And so use that time to reflect. And then additionally, this is where the collaboration comes in.
Yeah.
What would it look like for you to work with a non-music teacher within your building on a historical aspect to a tune? Let's say you're studying swing and you're in the swing era. What about using some cultural events or some some, you know, current events that happened during that era that reflected the influence on the music as well.
Right.
And then doing it with, a you know, another teacher, a social studies teacher. And, you know, so cross-curricular can come into mind, too, where you could put up a lecture. You can put up an assignment where you're saying work with somebody else in another course. What would a listening assignment be with another ensemble, you know? And these are things that I want people to at least be thinking, you know what? I've always wanted to do that. Or my students can benefit from that.
I like what you said about the reflection, man. I think not only are there what ifs about if we don't have jobs or if our jobs are different or if we have to go, whatever. There are also some what ifs of what if we return the same way we were before we left for spring break? And what I mean by that is this has been a time for me to think about me going into my 10th year of education. What are some things personally that I can change that may draw more out of my kids in the current context that I'm in? Because where I teach now is starkly different than where I taught in HISD. There are some similarities, but just the type of student that I'm teaching, and this has nothing to do with income or anything like that. It's just a different environment. You understand what I'm saying? So what does it look like for you to, during this time, when I tell you, Eric, I've really, being that I'm not in the classroom and I'm also changing the way I'm holding kids accountable because of the norm of the pandemic. It's like, wait a minute, kids are responding. How can I take this over into next fall in whatever capacity we're in that would also change? It's helping me learn some of my students a little bit better. It's helping me be a little bit more compassionate. It's helping me be give a little bit more grace as well as giving truth. You know what I'm saying? And I think as directors, you can attest, we know plenty of people where it is, hey, let's get it done. I need you to focus. But in this context that we're in, it does not help to do that. It does not help to get on a Zoom and go crazy on people when we don't know what's going on. Or maybe there isn't anything going on. They got good Wi-Fi. They got, you know, all things are well. But we are in a pandemic.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I had a student email me or text me. And he was just like, Mr. McLean, I just want to apologize. I just haven't had any gumption or energy to do the audition music. I just haven't had a desire. I planned on getting days to focus in on it, and I just can't. I just really miss being at the school. That was my sanctuary for me to go and practice and learn my music, and I feel like I'm letting you down. I was like, and at first I was like, dude, you got to get over it, you know, but yeah. I had to calm down. I had to be there. I had to be compassionate while at the same time providing accountability and letting him know, hey, you're now going to be a sophomore. So these incoming students are going to lean on you as front ensemble members and things of that nature. And he really appreciated that. And he said, you know, thanks for this. I appreciate after our last meeting on Thursday, he was on the Zoom. He was like, I love the way the vision of where you're trying to take us as a section. And I can honestly say just me being the way that I am and what I stepped into, I don't know if I would have been at that place if we were still in school. And I just had to take a page and say, you know what? We are in a different context. And if I go crazy right now, that could set something off in him. Because he even told me, he's like, I don't want to quit band. I still want to be here. I just haven't had that push that I'm used to you giving me. And so, for lack of better terms, I just had to not be myself in that moment. And I had to just say, hey, man, this is not the norm. And, you know, it was beneficial. And I think a lot of us as directors, this might have been a very, you know, keen way to change some of our actions, to change the way we are with our students, the way we talk with our students. Some of our expectations can stay the same, but how we get kids to those expectations may need to change. And if anything, that will, that may not show up on the UIL scorecard for marching season or, you know, concert sight reading. Those kids still may come up a few chairs short of region, but it will change the impact of your program and it will change the trajectory of their lives, man.
You know, you've always been a compassionate educator. I just think, and we obviously, you know, we are really promoting that right. concept and that characteristic of being an educator. Yeah. But you and I were very, very hard nosed with our high expectations.
Yeah, for sure.
That, you know, we would share with them and be mm-hmm. open, saying, "Okay, you're dealing with X, Y, and Z issues."
But yeah, yeah.
But we still have a job to do, mm-hmm. and we would acknowledge that it would be harder
yeah.
than some of our colleagues and their peers in other settings.
For sure.
You know, and so we would say, "All right, we just have to come to the realization that it's going to be harder. It's going to be yep. more difficult. It's going to be more time consuming, mm-hmm. but it's not impossible." Nope. And I think you and I were able to share a lot of those successes because we facilitated that mindset.
Yeah.
And for you to be able to be vulnerable enough and reflective enough to say, man, instead of me telling this kid, like, man, just snap out of it.
Do
what you need to do.
Right.
You were able to say, okay, you know what? Let me take a step back. All right, man, let me listen to you. What's going on? I mean, just the other day when I did that wellness check on our boys, it's like one of our colleagues said that his students won't even get out of the bed. You know, they're dealing with mental health issues that, you know, where is the counselor that they did have accessible?
That's good.
You know, if you never talk about things with your parents and there's this cultural divide and this generational divide, and the person you found solace with within your band director, your music teacher, now they're not accessible either. I mean, this just things of drastic changes that have happened to our students, like you said, that found solace, a safe haven, and a sanctuary in our music organizations and spaces.
Yes, sir.
And so for us to be open to say, you know what? What can I do to better help you? And I think your flexibility and understanding with that student allowed for him to come back and be present and saying, you know what? I recharged a little bit. I got out of my funk a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And what something that we need to be cognizant of is that our students might, you know, slip back into that funk again.
For sure. For sure.
You know, this pandemic affects people in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so for us to just say, you know what? Hey, how much time do you need? All right, cool. I'm going to give you two extra days. Let me know how I can help you.
Yeah. That's what I had to do.
And I know, but I know if we were in the band hall, though, you would be like, oh, you didn't turn it in? Oh, well. You know what I mean?
Facts.
Exactly. But you are at least cognizant of saying, you know what? I couldn't hold him to the fire, physically hold him to the fire and saying, you're here, do it.
Yeah.
Where we don't have as much control from the school hours that we did have them at in their home setting now,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether they're sharing resources or bandwidth is messed up or whatever the case may be, for us to just be open and saying, you know what, okay, let me give you some extra time. Let me present this material different. And one thing that you said about assessing differently in online instruction, you cannot assume that you can just pick up your classroom and then put it online. You know, the way you used to give out tests where you could be present to make sure nobody's cheating. Well, guess what? If you put it on an exam online, the kids are going to cheat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you would take the exam, screenshot it, pass it around.
Boom.
Like, the kids know that. So we have to be unique and creative and just think other ways of assessing our students.
Yep.
It could be individual assignments and using assessments as an informal learning or an informal assessment. And so you have to now shift even that concept of teaching where, you know, we were always given that fear that when you get to college, you have a midterm and a final and that's it. And if you don't pass those, you fail. That's unrealistic. And so
it's not true.
You know what I mean? So we have to start breaking things down and focusing more on the individual versus or working in smaller ensembles, chamber groups, you know, duets, trios. What would it look like to pair up with somebody else and do those kind of things? And I notice that Justin and I have not really kind of advocated for the virtual ensemble because that's difficult to do. Mm-hmm. You know, how can you put on a program? Let's say you have 60 plus people in your instrumental music ensemble.
Right.
And now you're mixing down 60 tracks, 60 videos. You know, they're all some are landscape, some are portrait, and you're doing it on Windows without any programs. It's just you have to be understanding. And so there are enough resources, by the way. There are webinars out there that you can share with your administration if your administration is pressuring you to do one of those, because it is very time consuming and laborsome on the production side of things.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to work things out where we're still developing musicians, because again, we gravitated towards those virtual ensembles because let's be real. Most of our curriculum in ensembles has always been performance based, repertoire based. And instead of developing the individual musician that in return could play more challenging repertoire.
And what is it? And this is my last thing. What does it look like for us to take, if that is your norm, if marching band and that is your apex. Okay. Here's an idea. What if you get the district or we figure out how to, you know, buy some, the virtual marching writing programs, you make it available for students to build their own marching shows, and then throughout the fall semester, you have UIL marching competitions where student A from the brass section is up against student B from the woodwind section, and they program music. It may not be a classical piece. It may not be dead composers, but it may be popular music. They put together a show, and you guys meet on Zoom and meet right there at the 50. That would change. I'm telling you, it would change the trajectory. It would just change the way your kids think. So if they did say, hey, September, we're back on, football's good, these kids now have a deeper appreciation. They understand the work, and they're willing to be a part of the creative aspect of putting a show together. It's just so many ways to do this. You just got to be willing to sit there and reflect, analyze, and think from the student's perspective, not the teacher's perspective, but from the student's perspective.
And I think this is a perfect opportunity for us as teachers to be way more culturally responsive of our students.
Yes, sir.
A perfect opportunity. Oh. Survey your students. Find out their interests outside of what you expect or think they like within your band program.
Yep.
You know, I've always wondered in the really large band programs with, you know, five concert bands, what happens to, you know, what people call the scale band, the fifth band. You know, is there a reason why those students are lacking interest? And if they are, why don't we be creative?
Right.
And maybe work with them to, you know, let's do things by ear. You know, give them a starting pitch and say, your project is to be of integrity for one, but start on Concert F and play Happy Birthday. Without any, I mean, just a tune that most of us will know, and develop that ear. That develop that just playing off the top, where, you know, a lot of us as within the classical diaspora, if we don't have that sheet of paper in front of us, then we can't create music. Yeah. And that's, and this is where it, we have an opportunity to really expand, because and by the way, I'm not advocating for this to not develop the classical musician. And quite the contrary, I think this will enhance the classical musician.
Agreed.
You know what I mean? Just the other day, I was sitting on one of the MBDNA, the Minority Band Director National Association webinars, and Ronald Carter was one of the guests, and he actually said he was set up to be the next concert clarinetist because he used to pick up records and transcribe the concert clarinetist with his clarinet. Like, who was, you know, back in the day, you always heard about, obviously, jazz musicians.
Right. But weren't transcribing a classical piece.
Exactly. And for him to do that, and then he was... And he said, I chose to go the jazz route because most people within orchestras and within those top level positions didn't look like me. You know what I mean? But he had that ear training as a classical musician.
Yeah.
And that just started making me think, like, oh, man, what if we started developing our students' ear with other aspects of things, or, you know, to play back a melody of their favorite pop tune, you know, and figuring those things out. And then add on the theoretical aspect.
But there's ear training right there, even if it's just simple as, hey, here's a list of popular tunes from the last, I don't know, 4 to 5 years. I want you to give me the concert key, and I want you to play the main theme of what you think the theme of that song is. Even if they play the bridge or something that they may think is a theme, the training of that will insert itself into the next context that they sit down in. So they're sitting there playing Mahler or playing with, you know, Balmages or whatever, but because they were training their ear to hear this C minor piece, I understand what that means to be in tune, or how do I match pitch from everybody in my section. It's just too many ways for us to be successful, and it can't just be a one avenue type thing. Music wasn't created for it to be like that.
Talk about it. I think we have structured the way we do music partially to validate ourselves and to keep music in schools and to have assessment and evaluation.
Right.
That we unfortunately have, some of us have gone away from the true essence of what it is and the joy that we had to create this music. So, Justin, man, final thoughts.
Man, I want to encourage all you educators out there, especially my fine arts educators, whether you're in orchestra, band, choir, elementary music, whatever, man, just be encouraged. Know that, you know, this pandemic is unstable. We don't know what's going to happen. But what you do know is that those kids that you teach every day, they really appreciate you. They love on you, even when you think they don't. So it's only fair that we take the same uncomfortability that they have of not knowing what's coming next and put ourselves in that same position by going beyond what we learned while we were at our universities and just look into the internet, look into what sparks your interest and try to create moments and memories for your kids that even though this is unstable and we don't know what's going to happen, go beyond yourself. Try to figure out what other means you can pull to help educate your kids, spark interest, and ultimately still create quality musicians. So, yeah.
And I'm with you, Justin. I would also add that you be an advocate for yourself and your program. Yes. Don't let someone else decide. Now, given if you are, you know, at the helm of your fine arts director or your administrators, you can still be having these conversations and mm-hmm. provide solutions to them that in the end, you at least were able to hear, you know, be heard.
Yeah.
And the other thing I want to give y'all is just to be kind and gentle to yourselves through this process. We have to understand that, you know, nobody's been down this route, you know, for, you know, if you want to look back 100 years ago to the flu pandemic, you know, obviously online learning was not a possibility back
right.
then. So for us to shift to this, it's we have to be kind and gentle to ourselves in this process, but be willing to provide solutions and advocate for yourself and your program. So we hope this was beneficial to you. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, let us know. You know, we would love to hear from you and just keep pushing on. I know there's a couple more weeks for some of our educators. Finish strong, finish tough, and be the facilitator and the strong person that our students need.
Yes, sir.
This has been another production of The Score. Connect with us on social media at PodTheScore. Send us an email, podthescore@gmail.com, or visit our website, revivalmusicproject.org. If you've enjoyed this episode, do us a huge favor. Rate and review us. This will help us reach even more listeners. Intro music by Justin McLean. The rotation and outro music by Ben Borges. And as always, let's continue to impact these lives through the vehicle of music.